Industry Pods and Evergreen Podcast Network are pleased to present the following podcast.
Welcome to day two of the 8th edition of LA Blockchain Summit. Today is Regulated Securities Day. I hope you all enjoyed yesterday, and a huge thank you to all of our speakers. And today, here's what is in store. Today, you'll experience a number of panel discussions on such topics as digital asset management, tokenization, and custodianship. And here to kick things off for the day is Opportunity Hub's Rodney Sampson and Draper Gorin Holmes' Alan Gorin.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, man. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Yesterday was a huge, huge day, probably our biggest day yet. And I think today can be even bigger. So I'm so excited to be joined by Rodney, who is a longtime friend, longtime partner in from the crowdfunding days, and also a venture partner at Draper Gorin Holmes. Rodney, welcome and good morning.
Good morning to you. It's good to see you. And of course, well done. Great job. I know you got to get through the rest of the conference, but it looks amazing. And I'm excited to be on the team.
Hey, thank you. So I thought it would be fun for us to have this kind of two-way conversation, fireside chat, because you know there's so many things to talk about, right? But I think a fun thing for everyone who maybe doesn't know you and doesn't know me that well is to start off one, you know, please introduce yourself, and then let's jump into kind of the background that brought us here, right? And sort of the why crypto conversation, because you know, with yesterday we talked a lot about DeFi and NFTs and all these things, and today is a lot of regulatory talk. And I think that the regulation or lack thereof, or a bunch of different reasons, are probably why we both ended up where we are today. But first, why don't you give your background?
Sure. So I've been building companies for over 20 years now. I actually started back in 2000 as a co-founder of a startup that was building streaming technology software. And we were doing that in Atlanta. That company was acquired in 2010. I, you know, did a rinse repeat a few times, four companies, two incredibly big failures, and then two exits, you know. And so after that was really looking really for more definitive purpose on how, you know, I could not be an outlier from my community in the ecosystem. And we, me and my wife and I, didn't want to just do philanthropy right out the gate. And so we created a social enterprise called Opportunity Hub. And for the last 8 years, we've been building these ecosystems in Atlanta, in Kansas City, now nationwide, and I'm sure we'll be in the metaverse like everyone else will be soon, perhaps. And, you know, building something, you know, from the ground up is not easy, never easy, of course. And so we've done a lot of amazing work, an amazing team, as it relates to the upskilling and job practice that we have in OHub, and then the startup programs and investment side of the house as well. And so in addition, we have a foundation that does a lot of advocacy, a lot of outreach, a lot of early exposure programs as well. And then I'm a GP of 100 Black Angels and Allies Fund, and we're pretty, you know, active investors inside of our ecosystem. I'm a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and I'm also a visiting distinguished professor at UNC Chapel Hill Kenan Vigo School of Business. Authored several books, Kingonomics being probably the most well-known, which is how we actually met through Joel Knopfler, right?
Yeah. The fun story for everyone is that Rodney and I met through a mutual friend of ours, Joy Schaffler, and that same day that we met on a panel for South by Southwest, we also met Joseph. So it's pretty crazy to, you know, think how many years later. It must be 6 years or so later now, plus probably.
Eight years.
Wow. So all on the same day, the same place. And I remember that was sort of part of the beginnings of the conversation with Joseph and starting at the time Crowd Invest Summit, and then cut to today in LA Blockchain Summit, because I would meet Joseph. I met him at that event, which was a great event. And then we started meeting at crowdfunding events. We'd end up at, you know, having a beer together and going, "You live like an hour away from me. Why do we have to fly to Florida or wherever we are right now to have a beer together?" and you know, eventually we went, "Let's start one of these in LA." And then it, you know, snowballed into today. So it's so great. We met each other that day. And what's great is I actually brought a friend along with me at the time. And in hindsight, it was one of the greatest things. My friend Shai brought a professional camera. And so we have like the most well-documented first time we met, because we got all these professional pictures of it too, which is just funny. In hindsight, it seems like it was like choreographed. But I remember, you know, we went to that conference, you were launching Kinganomics, and then you launched the Kinganomics conference, which was a really big deal. I got to participate, and that's when I really, you know, got to know you much better too, because I got to meet your network and meet all the people around you. But you know, I would love to get your perspective, and I guess I should give a little background myself too, but I'd love to get your perspective on, you know, where we are today versus back then, right? So we're talking about the Kinganomics conference was then, if we met 8 years ago, it was probably 7 years ago or so now. And you know, a lot of the talk was regulation. A lot of the talk was the Jobs Act and things like that. How do you see the changing landscape?
You know, I guess in hindsight, I think I have an overarching response that I've learned in the process. And I won't say I've learned this in the process. I will say that my appreciation for it was refined and maybe shaped over the last 8 years, that really paralleled the signing of the Jobs Act, Jumpstart Our Small Business Startups Act, and the evolution of that, the Reg CF and Reg A, and then how, you know, ICOs hit, SEC opinions there. But I will say this, and I believe this to even be globally, is that policy is precedence. And if you are building on the edge, and edge technology, the metaverse, blockchain, crypto, if you are building in the fourth industrial revolution, you should do yourself a favor and make sure you understand how policy is created and how policy is rolled out and how policy is enforced and how policy can impact what you're doing and what you're building, whether it is at the global or national down to the municipal level. Now, telling a startup founder or a disruptor or industrialist, you know, something like that may seem a little, you know, kind of, you know, tense, right? Because we believe that, you know, once we have domain expertise on the problem we want to solve, that there's nothing that we cannot, you know, do to actually solve it, especially when you're talking to technologists that literally can build stuff and get it to, you know, get, you know, automated, and it does it, right?
So yeah, well, I mean, I would tell you, you remember this too, but I mean, back when I remember when we first met, and even before that, because, you know, pre-Jobs Act. We were all participating in this space, and I was the young techie who was pissed off, right? I started my company, and I didn't realize what I wanted to do was against the rules. I just went, of course anyone can put up a fundraising campaign, share it with their friends on MySpace back then, and raise money for their company. Right. It would be un-American if you couldn't, right? And that's how I felt. And I went to do it. And all of a sudden, you know, my friends who were lawyers and people who were more well-informed than I was came to me and told me, hey, you got to take this down. You can't do that. And I was like, what do you mean? My example project was for a friend of mine who wanted to start a landscaping business and wanted to raise money from his customers so that they could help him buy a new truck and they would own a piece of his company. And I went, like, how could that be illegal? That's insane. It's really like was insane to me. And so that's how I started the conversation in the crowdfunding world. And I was so angry. And I didn't believe that the politicians would get things done. But I remember at one of the conferences, the big news that one of our friends told us backstage kind of thing, and then it became publicly known, was that they were I don't know the exact terminology, but they're reissuing the bill or putting it in front of Congress, and it was rebranded to the Jumpstart Our Business Startups, and it was rebranded as the Jobs Act. And when they told me it was called the Jobs Act, you know, this is post-recession times and stuff like that, post-2008, when they told me it was called the Jobs Act, I went, oh my gosh, it's going to happen. And they looked at me and I went, it doesn't matter what's in it to me, right? And from my cynical point of view, I went, it's called the Jobs Act. What politician is going to run next time and have any chance of being reelected if the opposing side could say he voted against the Jobs Act, you know? So, yeah.
That was a little ingenious, you know. I mean, I remember advocating for the Jobs Act behind the scenes, and you know, met Jason, Woody, Paul, you know, all the players, right, in the beginning, David, yeah. Will, and at the time politically, you know, Patrick McHenry, you know, the Tea Party was a thing, right, and members of the Tea Party. And so my perspective to folks was like, you're going to have to get consensus across the aisle in order to pass legislation. And so I went to Maxine Waters and asked her to support the legislation and to build coalition. And so it was literally the Tea Party and the Coffee Party coming together because, you know, Maxine was a leader at the time in the Congressional Black Caucus, right? And so it showed that even polarizing ends of the political spectrum. And I remember talking to folks in the White House at the time from, you know, my vantage point of how they were able to get Republicans and Democrats to come together around a narrative, and they actually were negotiating up until the last minute. And because they rebranded it, that's how they got it. They got it through, right? Now, Alon, you said something that I want to address. Like from your perspective and vantage point, you were like, "Hey, it would just be un-American to stop me from like achieving the American dream," yeah. right? Yeah. Whereas my lived experience and my, you know, parents and family's lived experience because of history, and I want go too deep there, but was to be cautious about everything. Because if I wasn't cautious, I may, you know, have a different outcome.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a long, rich history of that in our country. If I take a step back, it's patently American, right? But from my perspective as the son of immigrants who started their own business, probably because they could have never gotten a job anywhere else anyway, right? But from that perspective, it was, and plus Israelis, when they talk and they do the like this, that's really, you know, how they navigate a lot of life too. So to me, it was like, I'm a techie, I'm online. Why wouldn't I be able to do what my family did? You know, like a lot of, if we look at crypto even, and you know, what we kind of think is maybe normal or the new narrative in sort of Web3 and ownership and the idea behind like if we participate in something together, we should own it together and we should govern it together. And if we go back in history, that's kind of how community banks were supposed to be and supposed to start. It was the local communities or the churches or the temples and whatever, and the people getting together, and they would own things together as a community. And, you know, cut to today, you know, it doesn't matter how many years I'm a Wells Fargo customer, they're not going to give me stock in the company or give me a vote or a say in anything that they do. But in crypto, that's normal. And to me, that's how you were supposed to start businesses. You call up your friends and family, you had them rally around you, either by maybe investing, but more likely just hiring you, like being your customer. And yeah, that's how we started a business. So to me, it was like, it was the opposite of what, you know, I was told by my parents, which is work your ass off, you're going to be successful, right? It's just this interesting thing, but you're absolutely right. And, you know, but I give so much credit of what's changed to you and some of our friends, because, you know, even more recently, when they raised the crowdfunding rules and laws to the Reg CF to 5 million, they changed some of the rules and made it a little more lax and a little more usable, for lack of a better term. I didn't think that was going to happen in the time frame that it did either. I guess I'm constantly cynical that the regulators will do the right thing. But to their credit, a couple years ago, no regulators would have shown up at this conference. Today we're going to have previous regulators, guys like Jay Clayton, are going to join us, and we have current regulators like Hester Peirce will be joining us today too, and all sorts of regulated financial institutions and some of the biggest banks in the world. So, you know, it's a testament to change and growth, and hopefully in a positive direction.
You're absolutely right. These are definitely unprecedented times, and, you know, I think about really the collision last year, you know, of, you know, COVID, the culture. You know, I think about what happened to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and, you know, Ahmaud Arbery daily. And, you know, I must have had 1,000 conversations last year. And we've seen a lot of, you know, commitments to right past wrongs, or to, you know, help bring everyone everywhere into opportunity. And I think that the opportunity our regulators and financial institutions have is that the themes are there. You know, when you talk about the emancipation of capital, the democratization of capital, right? We've got the hashtags, we've got the themes, and now we just need to think about a more frictionless way forward. And so I would encourage, you know, we talk about this in the ecosystem, you know, Steve Case and I've had these conversations, Brad Feld, I know you all have talked to Tim Draper a lot, you know, their vantage point in terms of the speed, and why having less friction is important when building and moving. And so if you look at how America has to move forward to stay globally competitive, you know, some would argue, I was involved with Ro Khanna and others who helped to get the Endless Frontier Act through the Senate as a part of this huge American Innovation and Competitive Act. And they were looking at who, you know, what are the national security issues related globally, and how America being as innovative and competitive as possible was a matter of national security. And I also made the argument that the exclusion of people, because the fourth industrial revolution is moving incredibly fast, right? I think about the number of businesses that closed their doors last year and the people who lost their jobs. But then I think about venture having its greatest year ever, right? Yeah. More funding rounds last year than ever before. And so when you start thinking about how in a crisis, the problem solvers were capitalized to work on stuff. But then from my vantage point, I interact with thousands of problem solvers, technologists, and founders and entrepreneurs that cannot access capital fast enough, if you look at the data, for a myriad of reasons. So institutional finance, corporate finance, and also government finance, they have an opportunity to do what the private sector says it wants to do, but has not, and what it should do, but has not done. And now the people are saying, if government won't do, if corporate won't do, if finance won't do, the people were saying we must do. We have to be our own best friend, and we have to make sure that we organize our capital to build the communities that we want to live in the now and in the future. And I think that's where our worlds can collide in a very positive, upward mobile manner.
I love it. I think that, you know, we talked about this a lot yesterday, and people talk about, you know, COVID sort of accelerated and jumped a lot of our sort of the regulated financial world, the more traditional friends and family of ours and extended family and people across the world, whether we know them or not, we're sort of forced to work virtually. And, you know, I feel like I've spoken to the students at OHUB a few times, probably more at this point than I have the university that's literally across the street from my house. And that was purely because you and I, we live virtually, right? We live in these worlds, and it's so normal for us to have these kind of conversations. But for the first time ever in the last couple of years, I saw venture capitalist friends, a lot of the banks we're going to have on here, a lot of the regulators we're going to have on here, telling me that they did deals virtually without meeting the company in person, without meeting the founder in person. And I think it's a huge step forward in that promise we've been talking about for so many years of sort of leveling the playing field, or, you know, having this borderless world. But are you seeing that yet as a, is that benefiting the Opportunity Hub and the communities that you know, or the companies that are being built out of it?
It absolutely is. You know, having raised and now invest, you know, capital, and I often say people who invest, we still are entrepreneurs raising, right, from our limited partners. And so we're raising and deploying simultaneously. But having been that founder and that investor really simultaneously, there was once a time that capital, you know, was basically held hostage geographically. And if you couldn't fund getting to multiple meetings to close, you just wouldn't do it. And last year, we literally saw $156 billion in venture capital all invested virtually, right? And so I think that in itself, you know, removed at least one barrier in terms of being able to connect and think. I mean, I think about the pitch competition we did last year with Steve Case and Morgan Stanley, $2 million invested in Black founders specifically. We would have never been able to do that all virtually. I mean, the technology existed. Yeah. We could have done it. I mean, look, I mean,
you've been streaming media for a long time.
I was, you know, streaming 21 years. You know, we've always streamed at OHA, but, you know, the very fact that you could run an entire applicant diligence process, selection process, production process, and actually invest in real companies all virtually mentally required a shift. And so I hope we never go back. You know, I think we are going to have to remain in this hybrid accelerated pace. And I think that's where, you know, I think about the infrastructure that's going to be required to maintain that pace so that more people can participate in it. And that's why I get excited about the blockchain. And that's why I get excited about crypto. And that's why I get excited about DeFi. You know, I think I'm not distracted by the memes, you know, the fun stuff. You know, you got to have fun sometimes, right? But at the same time, we got to be focused on solving these huge problems in society and in industry. And, you know, that shift that happened in our ecosystem, which I'll call the startup world, right? The tech startup and venture world, which plays in the same sandboxes like the blockchain and crypto and the AI and the machine learning and the meta, you know, that world is responsible for 60% of net new jobs. And so if you're in a corporate or government space, you know, OHUB is working on a project now with Treasury and Commerce around the state Small Business Credit Initiative. It's a $10 billion allocation of capital that goes to states that can be used to fund small businesses. And what I'm trying to get the teams to do is to adapt our narratives in the startup ecosystem, because they want that money to go to venture or towards venture funds that, you know, would then do what VCs do, that they have to adapt the terminologies, but also adapt the understanding. One real simple one, and I'll, you know, kind of, you know, throw it out. In the corporate finance world or the banking world, you know, it's business plans. In our world, it's, you know, pitch decks, you know, executive summaries, right? And it's total addressable market. It's product market fit, right? It's DEIS, diversity, equity, inclusion, solution. It's like the acronyms that we learn in terms of like moving fast and nimble and lean, they don't always translate. But I do think there's wisdom and infrastructure that can be brought to the table, right? Mm-hmm. Our world may be able to help folks build fast and build quick, but government and corporate finance and institutions can help us maintain it once we've built it, right? I think.
So here's where, you know, we've only got a couple minutes left, and I wanna actually, like, that was a perfect moment, because we have the most incredible opportunity probably, you know, since the internet in the United States right now, and we have a path forward. But if you ask some of my friends in the crypto world and beyond, the uncertain regulatory environment is a major issue, right? So we have, for example, some of the smartest minds in the crypto space, blockchain space here in this country. We have Opportunity Hub and programs like that, and amazing engineers and young people who could take that to the next level. But when I'm getting pitched to startups, I hear somebody with a Midwestern accent. I hear somebody sounds like they're from Texas, or I hear a California kid that sounds like he's a surfer. And then I ask them, oh, so where are you based? Expecting to hear Texas or the Midwest or Orange County. And they tell me, oh, I'm in Switzerland right now. I'm in Singapore, I'm in Dubai. Do you think, you know, that we, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, the United States might be squandering this huge opportunity by sort of in the world where the playing field is more level, it's also easier for us to just go somewhere else if we need to build something.
Well, I'm going to shock the conference by saying something, you know, from my perspective and vantage point. I know a lot of Black people who have left America because they're just tired of dealing with institutionalized or personalized racism. All right. I said it. Cancel me. I don't care. But my point is, translate that to people who want to build without barriers, people who want their ideas to be appreciated, people who want to innovate in America because their parents are here, their families are here, but they keep running into barriers. I know founders right now that are going to Nigeria and going to Kenya and going to Ghana to build their startups because there's more capital being organized on the continent for African entrepreneurs than capital that's being organized for minority entrepreneurs.
I will say this, we've never had a conversation of should we not invest in that company because they're in another country? We've never had that conversation. Yeah. And we've made investments now in India, in Israel, in all over Europe. I've talked to actually one African company that I love, but they might actually be too later stage for us. They might be too big for us already and for us to make that investment. So, but the thing is, what you said is not that controversial to me, because for as a punk rocker, at least growing up, all my friends would be like, oh, I'm moving to Canada. I'm moving to there. But nobody put their money where their mouth is until the last couple of years. I'm seeing it now all of a sudden, like it's happening all the time. So, you know, I think it's crazy. I think we're pushing against time. We have a great presentation from Ami coming up, discussing Onera and Fin P2P. Rodney, thank you so much. Give everyone a plug of where to find you or follow you.
Absolutely. I'm at Rodney Sampson, or Professor Sampson on most platforms. Let's connect there. And in closing, these are incredible times. I love America. And I want us to be the most competitive, the most innovative, the most opportunity yielding nation on this planet.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you everyone for joining us today.